This is Equestrian Legacy Radio's Campfire Cafe. From Nashville, Tennessee, I'm Gary Holt, and joining me in Santa Clarita, California, is our co-host, Bobby Jean Bell. Good morning, Bobby.
Good morning, Gary. Has spring sprung there yet?
Spring sprang. I think I said that right. Spring sprang, and then it took just a little bit of a retreat. I think we were in the 30s this morning, where it was like 60 yesterday morning. But supposed to warm up, and it's grass is green, and it's just, you know, everything's blooming. So it's that time of year, and I know it's pretty out in California.
Well, it is. We had a little rain yesterday, and I think Santa Clarita even made it on the local weather report last night, because we had, I guess we had some hail some places, and we had lightning. Not where I live, but it's a pretty large area. So, but we had gray skies and drippy clouds late yesterday, and I love that.
Yeah. Well, California's having a water problem, and so we want you guys to have rain, just not all at once. So
that's exactly right.
That is good. But we have a great show lined up today. Tell us who our guest is.
We will be chatting with Aspen Black and enjoying her music and her poetry, and she'll also be sharing exciting news about a brand new hot publication coming out probably this week.
All right, so we're looking forward to our conversation with Aspen, and we want to remind our audience that the Campfire Cafe is made possible by our great sponsors at the General Store, where you'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the equestrian and Western lifestyle. In the General Store on our website at equestrianlegacy.net. So grab a cup of coffee, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Aspen Black right after we go feed our horses. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world, online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Gotta give them hay, gotta go feed the horses, because it's a brand new day. Gotta go feed the horses, gotta feed them now. Gotta go feed the horses, because horses need the chow. No time for coffee, can't take time for me. Gotta take care of the animals, so many mouths to feed. Gotta go feed, got to go feed. Gotta go feed, gotta go feed, gotta go. Gotta go feed the chickens, gotta gather eggs. Gotta go give them crack corn so they don't refuse to lay. Gotta go to the hen house before the morning's through. I can hear that rooster singing cock-a-doodle-doo. Procrastination, get out of that bed. Each and every morning, everybody must be fed. Gotta go feed, got to go feed. Gotta go feed, gotta go feed, gotta. gotta give them a shout. I gotta go feed the horses, and I got to do it now.
All right. Well, we have the horses fed. I have my big cup of coffee, and we want to welcome Aspen to the show. Good morning, Aspen.
Good morning, Gary. Good morning, Bobby Jean. How are you?
Good morning.
Good. Well, Aspen, this is your first time on the show, and so you
yes,
need to just kind of hold on for just a minute, because Bobby is getting ready to do her world-famous introduction of our guest. So let the drums roll.
All right, I can't wait.
Oh, Aspen, the pressure is so intense. okay. Western Music Association recording artist Aspen Black is a versatile singer-songwriter with a vast, eclectic repertoire. She writes and performs in the contemporary Western, traditional country, folk, Christian, and cowgirl poetry genres, and she is also a talented painter, author, champion barrel racer, and all-around horsewoman. Aspen delights in connecting with her audience as an enjoyed radio airplay in commercial country and later Western markets since 1994. She has served as the founding president of the Western Music Association East Coast chapter from 2012 through now. She was the secretary of the Western Music Association's Western Wordsmiths chapter from 2011 to 2013, and she currently serves as the vice president. She joins us today to chat about her three newest projects. An East Coast cowgirl, her passion for all things equestrian is hardwired to her soul, and her life's work revolves around horses. Her two latest CDs, one of her original music, which was released last year, Eastern Western Cowgirl, and her 2015 poetry CD, Invisibility, are both getting a lot of attention and airplay by Western music DJs. Even more exciting is this month's release of her very first publication, a new book called Empowered Riding, The Guide for Recreational Horseback Riders. Published by Lemon Press Publishing, the book is due out any day. Calling Virginia home, Aspen is dedicated to sharing her love of horses, the West, its culture, lifestyle, music, and literature, with the East and beyond. This multi-talented, articulate, engaging, and entertaining performer is everything but invisible. Please welcome recording artist, poet, horsewoman, author, and Eastern Western cowgirl, Aspen Black, the Campfire Cowgirl. Welcome, Aspen.
Thank you, Bobby Jean.
Well, you know, I think that applause really was as much for the introduction, but it will be for you after this is over with, because we're going to have fun, Aspen. But Bobby has become world famous with her introduction, so people are just, you know, they'll send text and email and say, you know, we're looking forward to the guest, but we really are looking forward to what Bobby has to say. So anyway, glad to have you on the show. And we're going to have just a lot of fun visiting with you. I enjoyed our little conversation yesterday, and our audience mm-hmm. is always interested in knowing how folks got involved both with horses and with music. So give us a little bit of your background.
Okay. Well, let's see. I got involved in horses as a youngster. It's maybe surprising to some of you that my parents were not horse people. The only actual tie in my family to horseback riders and horsemanship is through an uncle of mine who used to work at the racetrack with thoroughbreds and then standardbred racers. So as a young child, I was drawn to horses, but didn't necessarily grow up in an equestrian setting. However, I was out in a rural area. We had a hay farm on the left of us, a 250-acre cattle farm across the road. So the rural lifestyle was definitely born into me. As for the horses, I was the horse crazy kid that went to the fair and plunked down my money on the pony rides 50 cents at a time and didn't want to go in and ride the Ferris wheel because I'd rather stay on the outside and ride the horses over and over and over. So that grew. And I finally, like many of you listeners, may have had the same experience, convinced my parents to let me go to horse camp first, take some lessons, get around some horses, eventually volunteering at a therapeutic riding center in my area. And once I demonstrated that I had knowledge of horses, a natural ability, as the riding instructors told my parents, to work with these horses, finally, Mom and Dad were convinced, let's buy her a horse. But they didn't buy it from their money. I had to save up my money, and I had some money since I was six that I saved from allowances, mowing the lawn, and so forth, and it was earmarked for buying a car. And I went into this car fund and ended up finding a horse that I really liked, and man wanted $1,000. I had $750 in my car fund. So I begged and pleaded and made him an offer. And I think he saw how well the horse and I fit together. So he went ahead for that offer. And that horse is actually called the King of Bucksberry. That is the name that my farm is now named after, Bucksberry Ranch. So that's kind of a neat little story. And I had told my horse, as some of you know, we talk to horses, and I told him when I was 14, I said, you know, if you do really well for me and we win some of these shows and we have a great time together, I'm going to name my farm after you one day. And true to my word, at 20 years old, when I opened my farm, I did.
Oh, that's so neat. That is neat.
So that's kind of my early history in horses.
That is pretty neat. What was your first horse?
Well, that was King of Bucksberry.
Was he a particular breed?
He was a grade horse, but mostly thoroughbred quarter horse cross, but not registered, of course. Just the neat thing about him is that he was a Civil War reenactment horse.
Oh, wow.
And that was kind of cool because at the time I was riding both English and Western, and in Maryland where I grew up, English was pretty big, so I asked the man, does he jump? And the man's honest reply was, he nodded, he goes, yep, over dead men. And I thought, oh, my goodness. He was referring to the reenactment fields, of course, where the soldiers lie on the ground and so forth. So I thought that was kind of a pretty neat answer.
That was a pretty good answer. Yeah, it's. I've had several people say, you know, will your horse ride? And yes, you know, if you can stay on, he'll be fine. But that was a pretty good answer. That was a pretty good answer.
I thought so.
Well, we want to talk about both your horsemanship and your music and your poetry. We want to talk a little bit more about the music and the poetry during the first half, and get more into the horses during the second half. But when did you become active with music? And you were started at a surprisingly young age. Tell us about that.
I did. Informally, I would say the earliest recordings I have of me doing anything were I was about 2 or 3 years old. My mom would cut on the tape recorder, and I would be singing all sorts of things. But in terms of formal work, I started at age six violin lessons, classical violin, and that was through our elementary school, and subsequently took private lessons and so forth. And in that same setting, I also branched out into joining the school choir, the school band. I took lessons in clarinet, I took piano, percussion, drums, marimba, xylophone, so forth. Continued on in through the school area, going up into middle school, high school, so forth. In seventh grade, I joined the Maryland Youth Symphony. And one thing that's neat about my background is I'm a classically trained violinist who played many symphonic works. And I think a lot of that orchestra background really helped me to understand arrangements and hear the different voicings in the music.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I do everything right now by ear. But I read music very well. I understand music well. I understand the background of it, the history, you know, why things work the way they do together. So I think that brings a very interesting aspect to my work because there's the folk aspect, the country aspect, and there's also the classical. So as I said, I continued on through school. I had several opportunities through the Gifted and Talented program that my school offered to go to several camps, several different activities, both academically and through the music. So I've been performing in one way, shape, or form music in front of audiences since about age six.
Oh, wow.
As I said, I started then and began doing solos, actually, a little Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, you know, picture and so forth. But those little things, every kid does that. But it gets you in front of groups. And when you're used to playing to the whole school auditorium of, you know, 200-300 people at age six, I won't say I still don't get a little nervous once in a while, but it's nothing new to me. I've been in front of audiences for a long time, and that helps, and I really enjoy sharing my work. So, you know, just that whole experience really helped me to be able to know the value of being in front of these audiences and being able to look out there and see how their faces react as I play or I sing, and that's the reward in it for me, truthfully.
Yeah. Well, we want to take a quick break and play one of your songs, and I know Bobby has some questions.
Okay.
We probably want to talk a little bit about how you got into the Western music, but this is a song called Dream Ride, and is this one that you wrote?
It is. Pretty much everything that I have recorded for the last 20 years has been my own work. So this was inspired in Albuquerque, New Mexico, as I was at the Western Music Gathering, looking out the window of the Marriott at the Sandia Mountain Range about 4 in the morning.
All right. Well, let's take a listen to Dream Ride, and when we come back, we're going to talk more with Aspen. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
On my phone is back and then we can ride beside the Rio Grande with the moon over the Sandia Mountain. No one else to come and rest with me. The starlight through the night. Hear the first snowfall in Montana. Here's a heaven through the northern. Come ride.
That is Aspen Black's Dream Ride, and we're having a good time talking with Aspen. And I know Bobby had a few questions that she wanted to address with you.
Hey, Aspen, that's such a lovely song. That's from Eastern Western Cowgirl, which is aptly named, I think, for you and your life and your location. And that was really wonderful to learn where that song had come from and what had inspired you. Mm-hmm. I know this sort of a two-prong question. I know you're very involved with the Western Music Association, and I also know that you've got at least one sort of musical hero within the group that you've been working closely with. Tell us a little bit about who has inspired you and been a great partner.
Well, I'm assuming you're referring to my mentorship with Cary Grumbacher.
I am. Isn't he fabulous?
He is.
Yeah.
And we've been working together a bit for a little over a year now. And he's really helped me with a lot of my songwriting. We've been doing a lot of working together with some duets. He's been backing me on some mandolin. And so we've had a really great time with that, and he's also been teaching me how to book myself. I know he's done some wonderful workshops and seminars at the WMA and goes around the country giving these on how to book yourself in different places, how to go about this from the most efficient business-like standpoint. And it, as you may know, he's a touring singer-songwriter, troubadour, that tours all over the country singing his Western songs, so I'm learning from the best. So it's been great, and this year I've just changed my lifestyle at home with my children, homeschooling them now, to where I can go on the road, and he's been incredible in helping me get some open doors to these different opportunities, and I'll be playing now so far in Wyoming and South Dakota with him. I'll be playing New Jersey again with him. I've also opened some doors through what he's taught me, and we'll be playing in Georgia again. Several things I'm working on right now, setting up in Georgia. Alice, my daughter, and I have both gotten invited to the Durango Cowboy Poetry Gathering, and
wonderful.
So we're excited about that. So this has been just wonderful.
And that is one of the fabulous things about the Western Music Association, and you and I are both so actively involved there. And I attended one of those workshops that he did along with Junie Fisher on, you know, how to get yourself out there. And we probably have listeners that are performers, and we would encourage you to join the WMA and get involved in these kinds of workshops. And you have a very important role within the chapter, within the National Western Music Association. Tell us a little bit about the East Coast chapter.
Well, I am the president of the East Coast chapter, founding president. We started in 2011 or 12. We've been thinking about this for a while, and in fact, I tried to organize an East Coast chapter around 2005 or 2006. And did not get enough interest because we're so vastly spread out. Western music is not as prevalent, as you know, in the East. So it's very hard to band together people who are in so many different states and areas. But we kept at it. And Tom Hawk and I worked together a little bit at one of the conventions, and the chapter was born. And we now have several members who are very into the performing end. We also have some members who are radio DJs. We have members who are fans. So there's a whole group of people who are interested in Western music within the East. And our main focus is to bring Western music and poetry in front of as many audiences as possible in the eastern part of the United States.
Nice.
Amen, amen, amen.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit about, we just, of course, played a song of yours, but you're also quite a wonderful creative poet. Tell us a little bit about cowgirl or cowboy poetry. Kind of, tell us a little bit about just the genre, if you can.
Okay, well, cowboy poetry is an old form of entertainment or expression, however you would call that. Of course, I think many people have at least a vague idea that it's a tradition that came from the golden age of the cowboy, where the ranchers, cowboys, mostly working cowboys, would be around the campfire and speaking these different poems, songs, so forth. I believe the poetry and the music are very closely related, and you'll see that in a lot of the classic cowboy poetry, where some of it is in the standard verse format that you would find in a poem, as so someone would call, and then others have a refrain like you would find in the lyrics of a song. The actual cowboy poetry format really, I believe, is a way to pass the time, to entertain, and then it's been passed down. People, even though we have TV, radio, video games, all these things, there's still folks that crave this type of entertainment. We've kept it alive because it's worth keeping alive. It's something that people really want to hear because it talks of the themes of ranch work, the Western lifestyle, the landscape, you know, the mountains, the canyons, the cowboy way. There's a lot of code of the West in there, the memories of older cowboys, past generations, historical figures. There's a lot of humor in it, but then there's some serious things. So it's a broad spectrum, but largely when you think of cowboy poetry versus modern poetry nowadays, I would say the biggest difference, other than thematic, is that it mostly sticks to a traditional rhyme and meter format, where much modern poetry now that's being published in journals and so forth takes on more of a free form, takes on just some experimental things. There is some cowboy poetry that does that, and I dabble in it as well. But largely, you find it's rhyme and meter poetry.
I think, Gary, you have set up that the next piece that we're going to do is off of Aspen's new CD, Invisibility, and it is a poem, I Think I'll Ride. Is that what's coming you've got set up next, Gary?
We're ready to go with that, and as I listened to that, Aspen, I thought, that sounds like a whole lot of folks that I know that are in the horse world. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this one?
Well, this is actually one of the few humorous poems on this CD. It's a bit of tongue-in-cheek humor. And I Think I'll Ride is basically all of us who have all these responsibilities in our life, all these things on our to-do list, but we don't want to really do that. What we really want to do is go out and ride our horse because that's what it's all about. So I Think I'll Ride.
Think I'll Ride, and I think folks will relate to this one. So we're talking with Aspen Black on Equestrian Legacy Radio.
I think I'll ride. There's dishes piled to the sky, the laundry stacked a mile high. Mud is tracked across my floor, and trash bags nearly block the door. But I think I'll ride. The truck's a mess, can't find the seat, the propane's out, we've got no heat. The roof is peeling off the shed, that gate is hanging by a thread. But I think I'll ride. The fence keeps drooping further down, we'll starve if I don't drive to town. There's still 2 blankets left to mend, and 10 emails I've got to send. I think I'll ride. I ought to fix the llama's pen and drag the driveway ruts again. Burrs are still in Maddie's tail. If tax is late, I'll go to jail. But I think I'll ride. I need to clean the hamster's cage and load my sound up for the stage. In-laws come tomorrow night, might have to scrub by candlelight. But I think I'll ride. The barn roof has a gushing leak. I should have called my mom last week. That tire's low, still losing air. I'm running out of underwear, but I think I'll ride.
kids are begging for a game. It looks as if the mule's gone lame. I said I'd paint the church's signs. This poem just needs a few more lines. But I think I'll ride. My hair is tangled like a mane. A pine is down across the lane. It looks like World War III inside. My Facebook friends must think I've died. But I think I'll ride. That cell phone's dead, it needs a charge. Manure pile's getting large. The tractor's nearly out of gas. It's almost time to feed the donkey. But I think I'll ride. And if this place gets repossessed, I'll shrug and say I've done my best. 'Cause you all know without a doubt, the horse is what it's all about. So that banker's waiting for his pay, but he can wait another day. The saddle's calling me away. I think I'll ride.
Well, there are just so many people that can relate to that, and it may be tongue-in-cheek, but it's more reality than not. So it's a great, great point. Yeah. We were talking a little bit yesterday, Aspen, about the fact that it's a little unusual for somebody that's growing up in Maryland and in Virginia to be such a immersed in the Western lifestyle. And you did say, well, at least you grew up in the western part of the state of Maryland, so I thought that was cute. But your dad had a big influence on the way that you feel about the West. Talk to us just a little bit about that.
Well, he did. My dad was stationed in the Marine Corps during World War II. He returned to California. And when he got on liberty or got out, he would go touring around California area and so forth through different areas in the West, and went to Utah State on the GI Bill. And during this whole time, he really found that the landscape and the people talked to his heart. There was something there about the West, and I know lots of you who love the West too know exactly what I'm talking about. There's just something about the West that talks to you. And in this, he would return. After he came home to Baltimore, where he was born and lived subsequently, he would come home and then make trips out there. So my exposure to the West was largely through 8mm film that he took back in the 1950s.
Oh, wow.
What he saw. That was awesome. Now we don't really have that. We have our cameras on our phones and so forth, but 8mm reel-to-reel films that he project up on the wall and show me, just of things, some tourist things that people know about Death Valley, Grand Canyon, and some things that people don't know about, things he just stop on the side of the road and photograph. He would stop somewhere and walk up into the hills and fire his gun, because it could be done back then. So just things that you see, things you don't see, the people, the things that are popular, Route 66, so forth, and all the different things that nowadays many are gone. So it's an incredible record of the West from 1950 to, say, 1965 or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, he returned with me. He wanted to show me these things. And so I got my own exposure to that younger than I remember at first. I was told I was on a train trip out through Arizona and into California when I was two. I don't remember that. I was told I was at the Grand Canyon when I was three. Again, I vaguely remember a little adobe playhouse on the near the edge of the rim of the canyon. I can't say it's there or not now, but
right,
just little things to remember. So I was there, and then what really became more memorable to me was when we traveled together when I was a teen and young adult. We would go out there back in that time in the early 90s, gas was pretty cheap, 89 cents a gallon, therefore. I would drive my dually out there, crew cab dually, and could afford to drive it there. Now
right,
I can't.
Right.
but could. We'd tour all over the place. And he would take me back to all the places that meant something to him. And I think that's kind of neat. I was thinking after we talked yesterday that there's a line in my Snow Dog Moon song that's on the Eastern Western Cowgirl CD about returning to the Pinto Ranch And that was a place outside of Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where he knew some of the folks there and hung out with the people that worked that ranch. And so that was kind of neat, just things like that, that people who aren't involved in the culture, aren't involved with the people there, aren't ever going to be drawn to. So those little things like that end up showing up in my work, along with the different places we've been on Invisibility CD. The first poem there is Lusk, which is a poem that I wrote after one of those trips. Started it actually in 1996, maybe just a few lines of it, put it up, and when I was working on this CD, I just happened back through some of my old work and said, I want to finish this, and went ahead and finished that. And that particular poem is about one of those trips I'm talking about where we traveled. It kind of chronicles a little bit about what we were doing, talks about some of the places we went to. Leadville's mentioned in there, the fact we were sleeping in the back of my dually. We had a little camper cap on the back. Not a fancy camper, just a shell. And
right.
We're sleeping in two sleeping bags with the ball hitch in between us and waking up at 32 degrees shivering. So, you know, that kind of thing is fun, but that's how I got a lot of my earlier view of the actual physical West.
Right, right. Well, there's another poem, and as you were talking about, you know, going back in time and your dad taking photographs or taking movies with a 35-millimeter camera, it's another poem that we want to do right now called The Greatest Cowboy. And tell me about this poem.
Well, first off, this is a poem directed at my dad's generation, which has often been called the greatest generation. Mm-hmm. And the actual inspiration, other than that I've always wanted to get something across to really honor that generation, was when my son and I were driving to the swimming pool last year, and he saw a tractor pull up to the gas station. And he said, you know, that's a pretty cool tractor. And he was talking about it, and he asked me, you know, was that a popular tractor nowadays? And I said, oh, yeah. And he talked about our old 9N tractor that my dad and I used to work on together. And he said, well, you know, how come they aren't driving a 9N up there? Why don't they do that? And I said, well, you know, everything has its time. Everything has its prime. And that line's actually in the poem. And that whole conversation where I was explaining to my son about how, in this case, a tractor was exactly what they needed back at the time it was manufactured, but nowadays they have much bigger and better tractors that do much more, I kind of morphed that idea with the fact that every generation rises and falls and has its own unique things about that generation that make it so wonderful. So I coupled these two ideas together, got to telling him some things, and ended up actually writing this poem, the only time I've actually written something against blaring rock music at the swimming pool and still kept my focus on this poem. So at any rate, I hope that it speaks to folks in who appreciate The Greatest Generation, and
all
this
right.
is called The Greatest Cowboy.
All right, well, let's listen, and we'll be back in a moment to talk with Aspen on Equestrian Legacy Radio.
The Greatest Cowboy. Sitting on the porch of the old folks' home, staring at a picture of the bald half dome. Down below, his boots, the people scuff by, too caught up in themselves to meet his eye. All those crystal belts and their fancy jeans, will they ever know what being cowboy means? Through his dusty frames, he dreams of the past, still pondering why nothing seems to last. But like that 9N tractor, he's sputtering along. The only record of his life is in a cowboy song. He'd tell you all he knows for less than a tarnished dime. He rode for the brand back in 55, fought a war in the mountains just to stay alive. But like that Doc Barr stud, every man's got his prime. still, don't you recognize the greatest cowboy of his time? Now his thin white hair is twisting in the wind, blowing him right back to where he's always been. His old saddle creaks with the rocking chair. He's back to trailing cattle way out there. Like that 9-inch tractor keeps sputtering along. The only record of his life is in a cowboy song. He'd tell you all he knows for less than a tarnished dime. He rode for the brand back in 55, fought a war in the mountains just to stay alive. But like that Doc Bar stud, every man's got his prime. Still, don't you recognize the greatest cowboy of his time? Aw, can't you see him, folks? He's the greatest cowboy of his time.
That is a terrific, terrific poem, and I just love the thought behind that. So, Bobby Jean, I know that you had a comment or two there.
I did. Aspen, one of the lovely things about your this poetry CD, Invisibility, is the music that is accompanying you. And I'm assuming that's you playing all the instruments and writing the music. Is that correct?
That's correct. I like to play a lot of my own music behind my work, and you'll hear that in many of my latest releases. But in this case, I'm playing mostly acoustic guitar behind the poems. However, we heard banjo behind the first poem that we did. You'll hear a little bit, I think there's a bass behind one of them that makes a heartbeat sound. So just, you know, a lot of interesting things, not just to accompany it necessarily, but as you said, well thought out about how I wanted to frame that poem or the delivery of that song, depending what I'm doing, with each voice of each instrument.
Well, it makes it one can really be engaged with it, and you can listen to, I think some people don't realize that poetry can be listened to over and over and over and over again, just like songs. And even if we mm-hmm. think we know how it's going to end, you know, a great piece of poetry captivates us, and we learn it subconsciously as well, so that we find ourselves saying, you know, going right along with the poet, just like we do with a great lyric. And having that music behind it just makes it very pleasurable to be listening, you know, hit that play button over and over again if you've got the CD spinning. It's just, I think it gives it a lot of wonderful body. We're going to do another song before we move into talking about your exciting new book that's coming out. So we're going to have you tell us a little bit about Ride With You, which is off your Eastern Western Cowgirl CD. Let's set that up. Gary's going to play that. And then when we come back, we'll be talking about your book. And also, why don't we have you tell us also right now, before we go into the song, where people can find the CDs.
Okay, well, the easiest way to find my work online is through cdbaby.com. You can just search my name, and my different CDs will come up. You can listen through there, hear some examples. You've heard some great things here already on Equestrian Legacy Radio, but you can hear different tracks from the full CDs there. You can download from there if you're into that sort of thing, or you can purchase them and have that sent to you through the mail. Also, my work is always available at my live shows. There are several locations around my area that, if you happen to be in Virginia, that are stocking my CDs, my books, things like that. But always at my live shows. And often I give a live show discount. So anyone that is thinking about purchasing a CD and you happen to be in the area, double incentive to come on out and hear it live is that you will probably get a discount off that online price.
good deal. Have a great show and save some money too. That's, you can't get better than that.
Absolutely.
Support live musicians.
There you go.
That's
there
right.
Well, you want to
so
add, Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Ride With You, and then Gary, we'll just turn it back to you to put that on.
Okay. Well, the song actually was inspired by two friends of mine who went on a vacation, I suppose it would be, out to Yosemite area and hiked. They're big hikers. And they had shown me the pictures of where they were hiking. And when I saw the striking beauty in these pictures, my first thought was, I want to ride through that picture. I just want to get on my horse and jump right into that picture. And I had this vision of riding, holding hands side by side. And I thought, you know, if I want to do that, so do other folks. And so all that was in my head when I thought about that that whole song as I crafted it. And in my mind, it's about riding, but a lot of the experiences of my two friends holding hands, hiking together, the love between them is shown in this song. So it's kind of a morph between the two. And I think there's a lot of folks who feel the same way, who just want to go into one of these beautiful places, who have the opportunity often to go riding off into these picture-perfect areas everywhere. I think we have that everywhere. And so that's the song Ride With You. Go ahead and spin it, Gary.
All right, here we go. And this is Aspen Black's Ride With You.
Andy.
Song by Aspen Black called Ride With You, and we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk some about Aspen's passion for horses and her great new book that is just ready for release called Empowered Riding. And Aspen, talk a little bit about your horse experience. I mean, we talked a little bit earlier about the fact that you started riding at 8 at Girl Scout camp, and then you were involved in therapeutic riding. And you told me you started giving riding lessons at 14. So you go back long way.
I do. Like I said, picking that up where I worked in the therapeutic riding realm, I think that's one of the things that gave me the basis for the type of horses I describe now as being a good type of horse for recreational riders. Certainly not a complete therapeutic horse, but the quiet, well-mannered, easy to work around horses. I learned to appreciate that type of horse. You find them in many schooling stables and rental places, so forth. And there is a difference between that kind of horse and every other horse available. So that definitely really had an impression on me. And then, of course, you know, I went to teaching lessons and so forth. So,
well, when you get to be, you had a statement on your website that I found that I always emphasize with people, and that is horseback riding should be fun. I mean, you need to be doing it because it's fun. And, of course, we're going to end up having Bobby Jean and Jim horse experts after she finishes you know, learning everything from our guests that we have. But recreational horseback riding is really, you know, it's a guide for recreational horseback riders on here. 90% of the people that are riding today are recreational riders. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not competing in sports. They're getting out on the trails and riding, and maybe some small saddle clubs, but, you know, just to get out and enjoy it. And I have found, and you can tell me whether this is something that you see, most of the new riders that are beginning to ride horses are probably ladies, and most of them are probably 45 to 65 years old. Are you seeing that?
I've seen a large group of people in that demographic take interest in riding.
Mm-hmm.
Many of my clients who've come to me who are in that age group have said, my kids are grown up now, I've always wanted to ride horses all my life, or I maybe took a few lessons as a kid and never got back to it, life kind of got in the way, and now they're like, I'm doing something for me, and this is what I'm doing for me.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely.
Well, it seems to be that way, and of course, as a single fella in that demographic, I kind of like that because, you know.
Absolutely.
Gosh. Yeah.
Are you saying that you have a horse and you're available and will you travel?
I have a horse and I'm available and I will travel a certain distance. So, yeah, that's.
There you go.
Aspen, I'm curious about the title. Why empowered? What? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, to be empowered is really to have the knowledge and the desire and motivation to go forth and take control of your own writing. In this case, you're taking control of what happens to you. Oftentimes, if you ride just any old horse, you end up having whatever experience you and that horse are going to have together. Those who have ridden lots of horses know that if there's 10 horses out there for you to ride, you're going to have 10 different rides. Some of them will be great rides, some of them will be horrible rides, and some might be in the middle. And the idea of being empowered is taking control of that experience. It's not controlling the horse. It's controlling how you interact with that horse. It's controlling your decisions, knowing that you are informed, knowing that you are empowered to make this happen for yourself in the best, safest way that sets you up to have the fun that you got into the whole sport for. I don't know of anyone who buys a horse to end up in the hospital room. So, you know, that's kind of what it's all about. You buy it because you want to have a good time. You buy the horse because you want to have fun. And so many times I wrote this book because I see people who aren't having that fun, who aren't having the good times that they set out to have, that they spent money on, that they wanted to have. And I can help them with that. I've been helping people for 20 years at my farm have those good times. And now I can help them in other ways. And that's why the book came about.
Well, it's interesting because and I've been involved with horses always. I mean, before I was born, my dad had horses, so we've always had horses. When we've had folks that have been interested in a horse that we might have to sell, the first thing I do is to try and find out something about that person and make sure it's a good fit for both the horse and the rider. But I seem to find that most of the help needs to come with the person more than the horse. More education more education for the person than it does for the horse.
I think it's a twofold thing. There can be a rider who's an excellent rider, but you pair them with a horse that needs a lot of work, and yes, eventually they're going to do well with that horse, but not today when you take it on the trail. That horse is going to give you a tussle any way that you cut it. And with that being said, I think a lot of the goal of recreational riders is they don't have years or months to go out and work with that horse, train that horse. Now, some do. There are many recreational riders who find the joy in training or retraining, and that's great. And I don't mean this badly, but my book isn't really talking to them. My book is talking to the folks who want to have that experience that they first set out to buy that horse to have. They bought a trail horse, they want to ride down a trail. They bought a local show horse, they want to go in the local show. Not that there's no work involved, but it's not primarily based on work. And with that said, I think, you know, as my book lays out, the first half of it talks about how to find the right kind of horse for you. And everyone's different. So in that sense, you know, I can't just say everyone should go buy the rental trail horse. Now, granted, there's a lot of folks that probably would have a great time with that kind of horse. But there's other folks who would get bored. So, you know, in that sense, it really has to go with your personality, your goals, so forth. But then the second half of the book talks about some very basic training that I think every rider needs to know before they embark upon going on a trail, going in a show ring, or wherever most recreational riders go to ride. Just so many experiences could have been changed had someone had a little more of the knowledge of how to handle commonplace situations that crop up, yet they were unprepared or didn't know exactly how to handle them.
Well, with your background, you spent more time educating people than you have horses?
I think so. I've worked with a lot of horses, mostly either training for barrel racing or training for local show events. And I've done some retraining, too. I'm very familiar with the natural horsemanship that's so popular now. The horse that you see on the front of my cover in my book and is featured throughout is a product of many of those natural horsemanship techniques as well as traditional training techniques. She's really the kind of horse that I steer most recreational riders away from because she did take 4.5 years to retrain to become the solid horse she is now. If that's what you're into, that's great. Do it. I certainly will not say no. Mm-hmm. But in my experience, many of the people that come to me don't want to invest that type of time or effort, don't have the skills, don't have the physical endurance, and therefore they get frustrated with some of these techniques because they open what I call Pandora's box. And once you get started, it's much like a psychological thing with a person. You lay them down on the couch, you start peeling back those layers, and you're, well, tell me about this experience, tell me about that. You know, way back in your past, you know, your mother did this and there's a problem. But you're peeling back this horse's layers of fear and worry and things like that. And if you're not competent and prepared to handle that, sometimes things just don't go well. And it ends up just opening something that many recreational riders, while meaning well, are just not quite prepared to follow through with, even though they love to. They don't mean to do anything that puts them or their horse in a poor situation. But sometimes, you know, there are things that you need a lot of experience to handle.
Right.
So that's why I recommend, you know, that recreational riders, for the most part, at least start out with a horse that does not require so much work and retraining, and instead something they can enjoy right now, something they can load up in the trailer. A friend calls, hey, let's hit the trails this afternoon. 30 minutes flat, you're in the trailer, gone, meeting them at the park. That's the kind of horse I'm talking about.
Right. Well, and
that's the kind of horse I would need. What can you tell me some basic traits that I would be looking for in what you would call a great recreational horse partner?
Absolutely. The horse first should be calm in their surroundings. Whatever surrounding they're in, they should be, you know, just alert and not just dragging their head on the ground, but calm. Secondly, they should be easy to handle on the ground. Catching them, grooming them, saddling, bridling, working around, you know, blanketing. You should be able to catch them everywhere that you want to. You shouldn't feel like the horse is going to run into you, kick you, bite you, be so nervous that they're so worried about their pasture buddy screaming at them that they slam you into a wall. You know, that kind of stuff. They should stand pretty still to be mounted. That's kind of a big one because, granted, there's lots of us who can swing on a horse while they're moving. I've swung on plenty of barrel horses as they're entering the chute and didn't find my seat until I was about ready to turn the first barrel. But most recreational riders are not into that. So, again, there's a lot of folks who have a lot of trouble getting on and off their horses. And that's a biggie. They really need to, they don't have to be rock solid, but they need to stand at least long enough that if you can't jump on from the ground, you can climb up a rock, a post, a picnic table, something, or a mounting block if you, of course, are in that area, to get on that horse. They should steer pretty easily at the walk and the jog and the lope. There's so many horses that don't want to listen. They got their own mind. And there are so many horses that are good at listening, and you need to tell the difference between the two. No obvious dangerous behavior. They, you know, it's great if they can steer, but if they start bucking or carrying on, you know, that's not what you're looking for. Now, you might be saying, wow, you know, she's describing the perfect horse. Well, yes and no. I'm only talking about basic training here. A basic, well-trained horse should be able to ride out, period. If they are having these problems where they're dancing and prancing and they're going to blow up on you, they're not really trained yet. They need some help. And the recreational rider is generally not the person who's going to help them if they're looking for a horse they can ride out now.
Right.
And the last thing is they should be easy to stop. There's a lot of horses, you know, you shouldn't have to put, I don't hardly use any bit pressure on my horses. I ride most of them in a hackamore and just a halter or so forth. You know, a lot of it's verbal. And, you know, again, that's the biggest issue with a lot of recreational riders. They're just kind of feeling out how to ride as it is. And they don't need to fight a horse that intimidates them by being on go all the time. They need to know that they can have breaks and come down. And it helps a rider build security, helps them feel good. You know, hey, I can control this horse enough. I can steer him. I can stop him. I can make him go. You know, I know I'm using some very basic terms, but this is what non-riders talk about when they talk about horses. And these are the type of people getting into riding, just learning how to ride. And it needs to be something that the average person who's getting into the sport can understand and do. They don't need to be, pun intended, saddled with something that is way too hard for them to handle.
Right, right. Well, and that's what you mentioned. You know, it's important that you partner with the right horse. You know, you have to partner with the right horse for you and your skill levels. And for many beginning recreational riders, they just don't have those yet. And it's real easy for folks to become excited about the fact of adopting a wild Mustang or, you know, a rescue horse or whatever it might be, and then, you know, think, well, I can help this animal and, you know, be its savior. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, it's just the opposite. And it's important. Yeah, it's really important for folks to be partnered with the right horse and something that matches their skill levels. I can remember talking with somebody that is out on the West Coast, and they said, we have had to retrain so many horses that have been through a certain clinician's program. And she said, I had one client that was boarding with us for a while, and she brought her horse, and all she ever did was round pin work. And she asked the lady, she said, how long have you been doing this round pin work? She said, 4.5 years. Well, when are you going to ride the horse? Well, whenever it's ready.
Wow.
I followed the video.
That's what I'm talking about when people...
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
When they buy a horse that's ready to ride now, and I'm not knocking it. If your goal is to train a horse or retrain a horse, then that type of thing you're describing might suit your goal perfectly. But if your goal is to ride now, like you said, you need something that will ride now.
Right. Okay. Hey, we're missing one of your great poems I wanted to play, and I really like this thing because it relates. And I know we were going to go from poetry and music to books, but I do want to play this poem, and this is one that's called Fall Morning. And that's kind of the way it felt this morning because we've got a little dogwood winter that's come back into Tennessee. Tell us a little bit about this fall morning poem.
Well, I wrote that shortly after our baby mule was born, and you'll hear some references to that in the poem. I think many people have the same experience when they go out to feed in the morning. It's kind of cool. It's there's fog out there. Your mind is just able to wander with what you see around you. There's nothing interrupting you. So you end up just feeling this great feeling of peace when you're out there. And going out to feed, going through those motions that are in that poem, I think many of us have done the same things over and over and over through our time with horses. And just the whole thought process of being alone, being out there feeding, that's fall morning.
Well, let's listen to Fall Morning. We're talking with Aspen Black on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Fall morning. It's cold on these mornings as I check the filly. Summer has drawn her last breath. Chill in the doorway while I zip my jacket. Feels like the stillness of death.
The fog on the hill, so haunting and still, hangs like mist on a moor. Novels and dreams converge, so it seems, and I'm lost in some time before. The donkey starts braying, I snap back to present, straining to find brown and white. Cheyenne's in the shadows, so I follow her voice and shine the ray of my light. The beam, soft and cool, reveals baby mule, twitching ears at my sound, head tipping back, a shadow on black as she heaves herself from the ground. I lay down my flashlight and snug up my hoodie, climbing the tall metal gate. The smell of molasses brings knickers and hoofbeats as the ghostly sky fades to slate. An angel at dawn, so small like a fawn, loping up on the dew. Strong little girl, 2 days in this world. I stand awed at life this brand new. I make sure she sucks and head back for coffee, joyful that she's doing fine. I walk up our pathway while you're still asleep, feeling your hand in mine. I let myself smile, savor a while, hang on for as long as I can. And then I walk on in the solace of dawn into the fall morning again.
What a picture that paints.
Thank you.
What a picture that paints. And by the way, Bobby Jean, tomorrow is the first day of spring. We finally have gotten here. but it felt like a fall morning this morning when I got up early. So this is a great poem. Aspen, let's talk a little bit about when and where are people going to be able to purchase Empowered Writing?
Well, it is coming out imminently. As you said, we had originally thought about a March 15th release. There are a few little changes we wanted to make it the best possible product for the readers. So we've backed it up just a little bit. But the actual release in person will be at our Tractor Supply store on April 11th in Rocky Mount, Virginia. And I know not a lot of your listeners are local to that area, but if you are, I invite you to come on out, and I'll be giving seminars and sharing some of my music and poetry at that time from 10 to 3. So it'll be most all-day event. You get to drop in and listen to that kind of thing. And several other things, I'm starting to take it to different places. But it will also be available online as soon as we have the final copy of it. LemonPressPublishing.com is my publisher. She will be able to have that available for you there. We'll get it up online probably through Amazon.com. We have a distribution going, so I will certainly post that as soon as possible. The best way to make sure that you can get this is through EmpoweredWriting.com, my website. That's where you'll be able to either pre-order it by just sending me a note that you want a copy of that, and I will get it mailed out to you, let you know the link on that, or have you send me a check or money order and get that to you that way. But like I said, I can't pin down the exact link to a website right now beyond mine of the distribution online, but I do expect that it will be available through LemonPressPublishing.com, through Amazon.com, and probably several other websites, as well as for order through Barnes & Noble, things like that.
Okay.
It is posted on Out West's website. I always post all of the CDs and books of our guests here for this show, and you can pre-order it right there at scvoutwest.com and just put in Aspen's name or put in the title, and it'll come up immediately.
All right, that's cool. And just shoot me an email or a text, Aspen, and let me know, and we'll or Bobby, and we'll just announce that on the show. But you know, get it now. It's
wonderful.
Here. Yeah, so that would be cool.
Wonderful.
Well, let me ask, and we kind of wrap our conversation up because I know that you had an alarm that went off a minute ago, and our listeners don't know that, but you had to evacuate the hotel during one of our breaks. So we're gonna have to have you come back
and
talk
fun.
More. Yeah, it's been interesting, but we'll have to have you back so we can talk some more. But what is it that you want readers of the book to take away?
Well, I'd like them to really learn how to spot a good, quiet horse, a horse that works for them. I'd like them to know themselves as a rider, and that the book will help you find that out, who you are, what your goals are, what your personality is. I'd like them to know what constitutes the different kinds of horses. I have A, B, C, and D level horses. It classifies them very, very easily for you. So I'd like readers to be able to know what they're looking at when they do purchase a horse or are given a horse or so forth, you know, come about having a horse. And then I would like them to know that riding experiences can be the fun, safe experiences you go out looking for. And if you are informed, it's not just about finding a good horse, although I do harp on that quite a bit, because it does matter to what happens now, your experience today, rather than I'll train it for later. But beyond that, I also want them to realize that some of the activities that people engage in, trail riding, show ring riding, things like that, on the local level, on the recreational level, are not as safe as they really think they are because they may not be as prepared as they can be. So people who read my book will see that they are prepared through knowing what kind of horse suits them best and prepared by having the skills that they need to make sure that they're safe as possible and can have the fun that they first went out to have.
All right. Well, you are a joy to have on the show, and we want to remind folks to visit your website. You've got a Facebook page, too, and it's always great to be liked on Facebook. So give us your website one more time.
It's www.empoweredriding.com, and then you can find me on Facebook under Aspen Black, and go ahead and like that page as well.
All right. So do that. It's always good to be liked. And so, Aspen, you've been a joy, and we're going to close out our segment with Cowboy Poem by Aspen, and we'll be back to talk more with Bobby Joe in just a moment. So, Aspen, thanks so much for being with us.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
A Cowboy Poem. I earned the holes in these boots from days spent in the saddle. Man, if I had a dime for every time I've heard that statement said, I could hire someone else to get these horses fed. And speaking of saddle, that reminds me of cattle. I could be a cowboy poet, you know, just by making them rhyme, keep it all in time, and waltz on the stage for a show. But it takes more than that and a cowboy hat to step up to the poetry task. You've got to blend words with behavior of herds. But still, I can't help but ask, why not a cowboy haiku? I rode down the trail. Stars filled the desert skyline. A river of light. Or a limerick. Now that cowboy thought he was bright, but stepped in a cow flop one night. His wife said, well, but cowboy, you smell. Go sleep by the prairie moon's light. Or a cinquain. The horse gallops onward through blowing snow and ice to reach the bluff where she gathers the cows. And just for fun, let's not leave out the Shakespearean sonnet. The brim of his hat dips low on his brow and frames his sun-darkened skin. He opens his arms, yet I don't know how to reach all that's hidden within. I know he was hurt a long time ago and love was taken away. He covers the scars so nothing will show to ride in the sun every day. No feminine touch, no words, nor kiss can
fill the void in his heart. I give him my all, but I know he'll dismiss the depths and stay apart. Yet love stares at me from beneath his hat. I'll pull him close now, content with that. Three quatrains and a couplet. See, most cowboy poems are missing out on what our poet's craft's about. Yet if we open up the door, there's still some things folks won't ignore. You know those pesky guidelines that go unspoken, like slant rhyme is fine in a song, but for a poem it's all wrong, and the meter must be right on cue. We make all these rules to separate fools till we're darned if we don't, and we do. But by boxing it in, expression is lost, and we keep our minds small, no matter the cost. So, I've written a poem, a cinquain and haiku, a limerick, a sonnet, and AB rhyme too. Each stanza's unique in its own separate ways, matching in rhythm, structure, and phrase. Now by changing the groove, what does it prove? That you can still write in the cowboy theme without sticking to the strict AB rhyme scheme. Play with the form, meter, rhythm, and rhyme. Make your poems more than a waste of time. Don't tell the stories that everyone knows, or ride down the trails where everyone goes. Be unique, be different, because what makes you the best is the glimpse we get through your eyes at the West.
Well, that is Aspen Black's A Cowboy Poem, and just such a neat young lady, great poetry and music, and you can't tell that she loves horses at all, can you, Bobby?
No, I think we'll have to have her back just to make sure we got that right.
Well, I think we do too. So, hated to keep her very long because I knew she had to evacuate the hotel. You just never know what's going to go on a live show. You know, it may be like me and have your horse lapping the house while you're live.
Or like me and have the earth rock and roll under our feet out here in California. You never know.
That's right. But that makes live programming interesting. So anyway, great young lady, and we encourage you to visit her website and like her on Facebook, and that's Aspen Black, and just a talented young lady. We'll have to find out more about what their WMA chapter is doing. As well.
Let's see. I think Tennessee would be part of her chapter that she's president of there, Gary. I think Tennessee falls in there.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of artists, you know, that are right here in Tennessee with Junie Fisher and Carolyn Martin. Just a lot of folks that are involved in the Western music. So. Anyway, well, it's been a fun show, and we want to remind folks about Equestrian Legacy Radio's National Trail Ride to benefit the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation June 4th through the 6th, and it's much more than a trail ride. It's a concert. It's an Extreme Cowboy Association National Championship. We've got Michael Martin Murphy, Templeton Thompson, Stephanie Lane, the Sawdust Brothers, all in concert. We're going to have a cowboy up ball, and we have a lot of vendors that are coming from all over the country, so there'll be plenty of great shopping and plenty of time to get out and ride on the 120 miles of trails between Nashville and Chattanooga at the Circle E Guest Ranch. So it's all to help kids with brittle bone disease. And you can visit our website at equestrianlegacy.net to find out more and to make reservations as well. So that's going to be a lot of fun, Bobby, but it's for such a great cause. And so next year you'll have to come out and join us.
Oh, I think that'd be great fun.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've got a great lineup of folks this year, but golly, we've already got Belinda, Gail, and Bob that are planning on coming out next year. They're going to be trailering horses from Arizona, and I think Kristen Harris is going to come out and join us. We may end up having a West Fest right here in Tennessee Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we might even get Aspen to come from the east a little bit west to Tennessee and get involved in that.
I bet you could.
Yeah, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And, again, it's to help raise money to help support these kids that are dealing with brittle bone disease, a terrible disease that's not curable. And so we also want to remind folks about the Legacy Club that we have, and you can become a Legacy member for free. You receive discounts and special offers from all of our Legacy Club sponsors. We have drawings each month, and this month we'll have a drawing for a great Highline from Camp with Horses, and then our year-end drawing is for a great portable two-horse watering system from Hydra Horse. So, again, that's free, and you get to save a lot of money and enjoy membership with our Legacy Club. So what's going on in California that you need to tell us about?
Well, let's see. We have our next SCB TV presents the Out West Concert Series. Our next one is coming up a week from tonight. We have a phenomenal singer-songwriter performing all original music dedicated to women's history. Her name is Katie Moffitt.
Yeah.
Katie, it's kind of hard to categorize her as a performer. She does it all. But this is a very special night, and, again, celebrating Women's History Month. Rob Wolfskill's concert that was filmed in January is now available online to see, and you can check that out at our website, scvoutwest.com. Just go to the live music page. And next week on our show, meet you right back here with a cup of coffee or cocoa or tea, whatever you like to drink at Campfire Cafe. We will be chatting with Mary Kay, Western Music Association multi-award-winning and fabulous gal. Just really looking forward to that. And that'll be next Thursday.
I love Mary and her family, so we look forward to having her. You know, I think this is her fifth time to be on the show. Fifth time. Yeah, so we're looking forward to that. Great, great music. Just a sweet, sweet person. So that will be next Thursday at noon Central, 10 Pacific, or 1 o'clock Eastern to join in for that. Sunday, this is going to be kind of a special show this Sunday on Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale. And tune in at 9 o'clock for that. Marilyn Tuttle is going to be your special guest. Bobby?
Oh, my gosh. You have Marilyn Tuttle on Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale?
That's right. 89 years young. And so just we had a ton of fun, and we'll be sharing some of her great music from the past that she's done. And also we'll be featuring a trio with Belinda and Marilyn and Wes. And so it's going to be a fun show. That's at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, and it'll be a blessing to you. And then on Tuesday on Saddle Up America, we're going to be traveling to Texas, to the Lone Star State, to visit a great guest ranch in the state of Texas. And we also will be having join us in the first half of that show, Showtime Trailers, and we're going to talk about getting your horse trailer ready to hit the trails and maybe upgrading to one of those great living quarter trailers. So you and Jim may end up having to get your horse trailer before we get finished.
I think it's inevitable, isn't it?
I'm expecting so. But anyway, so we've got some great programming coming up. We've got great guests that are lining up for the next month and a half on this show, and as well as all of our programs. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Saturdays, we've started a Saddle Up Saturday program, and that starts at 8 o'clock, so you can tune in anytime on Saturday and tune in to Saddle Up Saturdays. And you can listen to all of our programs at equestrianlegacy.net, and all of our shows are archived. You can get our free mobile app and download it right from our site. And I think right now we have about 7 countries that are using that. So you can listen to all of our shows while you're out on the road. You can connect with us on Facebook. You can connect to our website from that mobile app. So it's just a pretty cool deal. And that's free. So pick it up at our website at equestrianlegacy.net. Any final words that you'd like to share with us today?
No, other than just, as I like to say, keep it wild and make it Western.
All right. And one of Aspen's heroes, one of the folks that really influenced her and her music, she shared with me the other day, is a gentleman named Ian Tyson, who is just a legend. Mm-hmm. And gosh, he and Sylvia together were quite a team. But we're going to close the show out with Ian Tyson's Riding Down the Canyon. And we remind you, as always, if you climb in the saddle, to get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net. Thanks for listening, and Bobby, we'll see you on the trail next week.
See you next week.
All right.
At our ranch house on the plains, and all I've got to do is lay around. I saddle up my pony and I ride off down the trail to watch the desert sun go down. Riding down the canyon, watch the sun go down, a picture that no artist e'er could paint. White-faced cattle lowing on the mountainside, I hear a coyote whining for his mate. Cactus plants are blooming, sagebrush everywhere, granite spires standing all around. I tell you folks, it's heaven to be riding down the trail when the desert sun goes down. Sun go down, a picture that no artist e'er could paint. White-faced cattle lowing up on the mountainside, I hear a coyote whining for his mate. Cactus plants are blooming, sagebrush everywhere, granite spires standing all around. I tell you folks, it's heaven to be riding down the trail when the desert sun goes down.